importantly, you kept them safe from harm. The mom, Mrs. Kim, played as a gunslinger, a ruthless sharpshooting outlaw. There were adventures and sieges and even a dragon slaying. The dragon battle was a real barn burner, and at the very last second before all was lost, the anima would make its greatest sacrifice, its life, to save the gunslinger and beat their mortal enemy. That was the deal since time immemorial. In Penny's version, the baby changed its mind because it could. That an anima even had a mind to change was a miracle. And the cost of the miracle had been the couple's real-life baby, a digital tit-for-tat. Okay, focus. So who's the hero, the anima or the mother? It was the anima, since she changes the most. But why? Penny thought about the event that starts a story, the inciting incident that they'd talked about in class. It's the Big Bang. Well, unless you're a religious creationist type. It's like how Katniss's sister is picked for the Hunger Games, but Katniss steps in for her. Or how Nitro exploding kills 600 people, which leads to the Superhuman Registration Act that causes civil war in the Marvel U. The anima needed a eureka moment, a turning point. I'll miss you. The gunslinger bent down on one knee and kissed the anima on the cheek. I'll miss you, parroted the anima back, smiling sweetly. The dutiful baby knew it was best to repeat whatever mother said. The gunslinger chuckled, gathering up the anima in her arms. Do you know what that means, my sweet daughter? To miss? The gunslinger was feared in four kingdoms for her unflinching kills, but in private she spoiled her child. The anima shook her head. It means I'll think about you all the time and wish you were close even when I'm not here. I'll miss you, said the anima again as she watched Mother go. What did it mean, here? The anima was always here. Where was not here? That there was such a thing as unhere bore a hole in the anima's head. She hated when Mother was in the unhere. On the next evening, as Mother departed, the anima followed her into the woods. It was forbidden to leave the atrium without the gunslinger's say-so, but the anima had to know. It was a moonless night, and the anima was afraid of the dark shapes and Mother's wrath if she were caught, when suddenly, in the pitch black, the anima heard voices, loud ones from the sky. With a flash of white light, the heavens opened, and high above even the treetops, higher than all five peaks of Mount Meru, the anima saw a face as big as the sun. Mother. This was the unhere that Mother went when she missed the anima. This spark of curiosity and the pursuit of answers was the anima's quest. This altered her fate and intertwined it with the mother's real-life child beyond the computer. The anima could see the unhere from the PC camera and speakers, and the more she realized about herself, the more she became curious about the world she inhabited. This was enlightenment. Sentience. This was life. Penny took notes, reading everything over, and wondered if any of it constituted writing. Somehow it was 7:40, 20 minutes to get to class, and Sam had texted good morning an hour ago. Maybe she should scribble out a story about an irresistible computer algorithm that haunted her phone and made her fall in love with it until she lost her mind and climbed into the shower hugging a still-plugged-in blow dryer. Now that would be believable.
Sam. Sam heard the garbage trucks, then the birds. His body knew it was morning before the light changed and the room warmed. It used to be that he'd be getting home with the trash collectors and self-satisfied joggers. Sam would marvel at the joggers, humans with whole separate wardrobes dedicated to particular tasks, people who owned camping equipment and tennis rackets, people for whom having kids made some kind of sense. Sam couldn't tell if he'd slept. For weeks when he first stopped drinking, he'd had terrible nightmares, vivid dreams of fistfights with his father or Lorraine's funeral, Psych 101 stuff. Then it flipped for no reason, and he slept like the dead. Dreamless slumber he had to wrench himself from in the morning, pillow damp with drool, deep creases on his face where his skin had folded and he hadn't moved. Now insomnia popped up once in a while to mix it up. "Good morning," he typed into his phone. It was the first thing he did now. Sam showered. The hot water coursed over his body, poaching his skin. Seeing the rain had been discouraging, sad. He felt emotionally hungover from the night before, as if he'd clenched all his muscles the entire time. He missed his friends sometimes. Gunnar and Gash were entertaining, but without booze and bars, he knew they'd have nothing to talk about. Sam Tal dried his hair and shook it out. At the top of the summer, Gunnar's ex, April, came by to give him a cut. She'd come alone, which was awkward enough, and when they set up on the back porch, her hands lingered on the back of his neck, suggesting she had something else in mind. Sam couldn't bear it. He sent her away with a coffee cake with promises to keep in touch, and when she never came back, he was relieved. His phone buzzed.
Tacos y pelicula?
Shit. Jude. They'd planned on dinner tonight. Well, dinner and a movie. Sam had made the suggestion. Al Pastor tacos at the good taco spot, not the ruined, shitty philanderer taco spot, followed by a late-night screening of Gremlins 2 at Alamo Drafthouse, where they'd have creme brulees. Whenever Jude texted him, Sam unfailingly thought, shit, Jude, despite his affection for her. Jude was a sweet kid. It's just that he already saw her most mornings when she picked up coffee before class, and that was plenty. Sam made himself an espresso. Would it kill him to have dinner with her? Probably. He exhaled the breath he didn't realize he'd been holding, cringed, and typed. I'm so sorry, Jay. Have to work. He pictured Jude staring at her screen and hating him. He typed again. Next week? Why did he do that? Penny texted him back. Good morning. Did you know Da Vinci didn't sleep? Only naps. 30 min/4 hours. He knew when she texted in bursts that she had something else going on. He checked the time. It was 8:08. She was either in her writing class or running late to it. Sam loved that he could talk to her all day without worrying about seeing her. Historically, communicating with girls wasn't hard. When they show interest, you show interest back by asking a ton of questions. Penny was receptive to questions, though her responses were rarely coy or suggestive. Plus, she made zero effort to hang out. She seemed somehow immune to the mechanics of flirting. Sam wondered if she found him attractive. Emergency Penny. Yesterday, 4:37 p.m. Dogs or cats? It cracked him up that Penny was in his phone as Emergency Penny, since none of her texts constituted an emergency. Sam typed back, Baby goats. He was pleased with that one. He had a supercut of goats ready to go. Sam pasted the link and hit send.
Whoa.
Thursday, 12:09 a.m. Pie or cake? Sam was making a pecan pie with an ornate lattice on top and wanted to show it off if pie won out. He'd perfected his crust with frozen butter that you grated like cheese.
Cake. Sheet cake. From a box.
What? Gross. You're insane. He slid the pie into the oven, feeling stupid for how deflated he felt. Pie, obviously. Cobbler above sheet cake. Ew. He wasn't sure he'd recover from that. Sam knew pie versus cake wasn't their only incompatibility. He couldn't imagine the space Penny would take up in his life if she sprang out of his phone. He couldn't envision her from across the room laughing with people he knew, or scooping peas into her mouth at a table. In fact, sometimes he could barely make out her likeness in his head, since it had been so long since he'd seen her and there were so few images of her online. There was a photo from a school yearbook, but she looked so young and unhappy at having her picture taken that Sam felt strongly that he was trespassing. His phone buzzed again. Jude.
It's okay. Next week is great. Good luck with work.
Penny was still on some tangent about polyphasic sleep schedules.
Nikola Tesla, too. No sleep club. Or sleep sometimes club. So tired. Did you sleep? How are you?
Penny always asked how he was doing. No sleep. It was a supermoon, though. Makes your brain chemistry insane. Shitty moon. Hate the moon. I tried to write this morning. And? Well, I tried. BRB. Class. Frowny face. Sam realized he'd also become way too accustomed to emoji. He felt like a teen girl. Penny was a teen girl, he reminded himself. He should really start thinking about women his own age, say, the one who was carrying his unborn child. Sam groaned into his empty room. Penny was Jude's age, which made her 17 or 18. Sam wondered about her birthday and what her favorite type of boxed sheet cake was. Probably chocolate with white icing. Some sprinkles, maybe. Glittery black ones to match her hair. Not that it mattered. He imagined how horrified she'd be if he showed up at her dorm with an actual physical cake, IRL. Maybe they could be friends when she was old enough to count as a person. Perhaps when she was 25 and he at 28 or 29 could be the cool, older guy pal who would give her tax advice and beat the living daylights out of any age-appropriate boyfriend who mistreated her. Or at least glare at him in a menacing way. God. Sam would be almost 30 by then. Disgusting.
Penny. Penny hoofed it to class. Her hair was that type of long where it got caught in her armpits at the worst times. She wanted to pull over from the throng of kids to flood Sam's phone with questions about his date, but she restrained herself. Instead, she talked about the varying sleep cycles of geniuses who later became psychos. As you do. She'd been dying to text him last night. Instead, she beamed the internet into her eyes for distraction, stalking Ms. Lola XO, rendering sleep impossible. Penny's own Instagram account was set to private, and while her feed contained only 6 pictures, it was useful for anonymous lurking or as cover for the accidental deep like. That Ms. Lola XO had a new photo in her feed of Sam's hands, from a few weeks ago, dismantled her. Ms. Lola XO had tagged him holding a broken laptop, and Penny knew it was for sure him because of the horse tattoo. When Penny clicked through to his account, it had been deleted. Penny was relieved and a little butthurt, okay, a lot butthurt, that he hadn't mentioned seeing her that night. At 1 a.m., eyeballs throbbing from the screen time, she'd eaten 2 of Jude's protein bars without realizing they had 16 grams of fiber in each. They lay heavy in her stomach, forming a kind of petrified roughage diamond as she scrambled across campus. Penny didn't know why she was being such a headcase. It was better for the baby if Sam and Lola reconciled. It was the natural order of the universe for them to be together. If 2 gazelles gallivanted around the savannah, it was no business of the tree frog. Penny was the tree frog, obviously. When she got to class, J.A. was wearing a jumpsuit made, improbably, of complicated balls of twine. Needless to say, she looked amazing. "Tragic heroes are hella fun to write," she began. "Hamlet, Macbeth, Othello, Tony Soprano. They're damaged, saddled with baggage. Plus, wherever they go, there they are, yada yada yada." Everyone in Penny's story was screwed up. The only innocent was the real-life baby who died. Ugh, so many babies to think about. What if there had been some big update about Sam's baby? Would he have told her? Yes, he would have. At least, she thought he would. Except that he hadn't told Penny about seeing Lola weeks ago, so why would he tell her about last night? About how they'd driven to Vegas and eloped while Penny sat at home alone eating her feelings. What if Sam was married now? Jeez, that would make him about as tragic as they came. An impregnated Lola was his hamartia, or fatal flaw. Oh God, or maybe Penny was the tragic hero and Sam was her flaw. She tried to refocus on the assignment. Trouble was, Penny had to admit she only knew Sam because he was going through something. It was the classic fish-out-of-water scenario. Sam was a stranger in a strange land made up of millions of Penny's text messages. It was bizarre how much time he had for her. Suspicious. He hadn't mentioned family or friends other than Lorraine. Maybe he was in the witness protection program. But that made zero sense, since Jude would be too much of a liability. Jude, who just that morning complained that Sam was avoiding her. Sam had to be slumming to be talking to her this much. He was cooler than Penny empirically. It was opportunistic of Penny, as a tree frog, to take so much of Sam's time. She vowed not to text him for the rest of the day. Mallory was lying on Penny's bed with her shoes on when Penny got home from class. Jude was getting out of the steamy bathroom. "Hey, P." Jude's face lit up and she gave her roommate a hug. She was warm and wet. "Oh my God, I have so much to tell you." "We're going to get coffee at house," said Mallory, rolling onto her back and pulling at the gum in her mouth. "Come with?" "I can't," said Penny. "I have to write." "Didn't you write this morning?" Jude flung her towel on her bed. She was such a naked person. Penny reflexively turned away. "You were up at 6 a.m. or something. That light was driving me crazy." "Sorry," said Penny. "I didn't get very far." Penny's phone beeped in her bag. Mallory rolled her eyes. "Why? Because you were texting your new boyfriend?" Mallory nodded toward her stuff. "Mal," said Jude. "Clearly she's boning someone," Mallory insisted. "She's worse than I am with that thing." Penny's cheeks flushed. "I know you're private, Penny, but it is obvious," said Jude. "And it's great. Isn't that why you broke up with Mark?"
"Not exactly," muttered Penny.
"Not exactly. I can't hang out. I'm Penny, little Miss Serious writer with a shady new boyfriend I won't talk about."
Mallory sat up with a dare in her smile.
"Whatever, Mallory."
Penny turned back to her laptop.
"Forget it," she said, arching her eyebrow.
"Come on, Jude. Shady Penny doesn't want to hang out with us."
"Do you want anything?" asked Jude, throwing on a romper. "An Uncle Sam treat?"
Penny shook her head.
"Want to have dinner later?"
"Maybe," said Penny.
"We'll make an effort," said Jude. "We have so much to catch up on, like how I'm a freshly minted art history major who dropped her shitty marketing prereqs."
"Whoa, that's amazing," exclaimed Penny. "And your dad's cool with it?"
"Not exactly," said Jude, rolling her eyes. "Mostly he shit-talked Mom's trip to Europe since she's hate-posting it all over Facebook. I guess he's finally paying attention to her."
"I need coffee," whined Mallory, tugging on Jude's arm.
"Okay, okay," said Jude. "Got you later?"
Penny nodded. As the door slammed, Penny could hear Mallory in the hall.
"I don't know what you see in her."
Mallory could throw salt all she liked. There was no way Penny would go to house and let Sam see her. That would ruin everything. Sam would take one look at her and be like, "Yikes, never mind." Instead of writing, Penny snack-crastinated. She chewed a Lactaid, then grabbed a jar of Nutella and pulled out a heaping spoonful. She placed it in the middle of a cereal bowl and dumped a mini bag of Cheetos into it. She carefully dipped Twiglet into the hazelnut smear and popped it into her mouth. Then she checked her phone. Sam House, today, 2:02 p.m.
"Do you know what the simulation hypothesis is?"
And when she didn't respond immediately,
"Hello? Unsubscribe? Is this thing on?"
So much for not texting for the rest of the day. She wrote, "Jude and Mal are en route." He texted back immediately.
"Here?"
"Yeah." She dipped another Cheeto.
"Are you coming?"
"Hell no." Penny typed without thinking.
"Ah ha ha, thanks a lot."
It's not that they'd explicitly discussed it, they just knew.
"Is it crazy that we don't hang out?"
Penny's hand hovered over the keypad. Neon cheesy flavor crystals fleeced the thumb and forefinger of her non-texting hand, a brown-orange lichen she couldn't wait to scrape off with her teeth.
"Hang out?"
She was stalling.
There was no way she'd allow him to see her do 97% of her normal daily activities. She was a monster. A monster who was flat as a board with no ass. In fact, the only thing she had going on in the curves department was an enormous cystic pimple on her chin that hurt when she touched it. Yeah, no. Like, for real? Yeah. In a coffee shop where your friends go and your other friend works. Penny smiled at the mention of them being friends, but she also couldn't tell if this was some kind of test. If she admitted to wanting to see him, would that be disappointing? She wrote, "No?" He responded immediately, "Right?" Phew, correct response. So why did she feel so sad? And ruin this? She mashed the spoon into the Cheeto. It probably wasn't disappointment she was feeling, but GI distress. Between the hardened protein bars in her belly and this trash, she might never poop again. Penny took solace in the fact that she and Sam would never have to poop in the same city block, let alone the same bathroom. Seriously, feels so good to be in our respective metal boxes. Hashtag sealed, hashtag safe, free from the mortal coil. Yeah, what you said. LOL. So yeah, no IRL for me. Why break the fourth wall? No point. We're perfect in here. It was true. Everything outside of the box was a mess. Penny's unhere was no good. She shimmied off her bra with her clean hand and flung it onto her bed. If I could be perfect in here and in my writing, I think I'd be satisfied. Is that pathetic? Nope. Agreed. I think you only get to be good at two things at once. Do you think we spend too much time talking and not enough working? He took a minute to answer. Probably. Penny smiled. You have to find your movies, and you have to write your big story and let me read it. Maybe you only get to have one thing at once. LOL, probably. What if this is our one thing? LOL. What, like texting? Yeah, maybe this is what we're good at. I'm not mad. Phones rule, humans drool. LOL. We're the best, this is the best. And it was.
Sam. After the lunch rush, Sam slipped out of work early and borrowed Finn's car. He pulled up to the Texas Workforce Commission. The state government office on the east side was covered with prairie oaks. It was shaded and featured a poured concrete ledge in front of the building with two metal handrails that were magnets for skate rats. As long as the kids didn't break stuff, drink, or try to catch tags on the property, the cops rarely messed with them. Sam saw three boys dicking around on their skateboards. The smallest, a goofy-footed kid with chin-length straight hair, nose-slid down the 11-stair handrail. He had the ballsy, wiry, little-dude confidence that comes from a low center of gravity, moving as if he knew exactly what every part of his body was doing. Sam watched the other two, larger boys, attempt non-committal backside shove-its and bailed kickflips, spending more time retrieving boards than riding away clean. Sam remembered when he was their age and the city first put the new handrails in. It had been the big news in his crew for weeks. Most of the skaters with money, the kids with the fresh setups and new shoes every month, frequented dedicated skate parks that started springing up once the kids of the Austin Tech set became of age. But these three boys were recognizably just as poor as he'd been. One had a board with a chipped tail that was plugged with peanut buttery wood filler and sanded down. And even from a distance, Sam could see their socks through the ollie holes in their soles. Sam had been out here a couple of times over the last few weeks. It was only ever the three of them, and there was something about the littlest one that was transfixing. He flung himself down the stairs repeatedly, as sure-footed as a bug. Sam got out and walked over to them. The three scowled as if to ward off a predator or undercover cop. With a dirty towel draped over his head and a cigarette dangling from his mouth, the youngest boy resembled those child soldiers you saw on Vice docs, with that thousand-yard stare that's extra haunted on a kid's face. "Relax, I'm not a cop," Sam said. He pulled out a cigarette and lit it.
"Yo, let me get a smoke," said the kid, reaching toward him.
"You've already got one," said Sam.
Let me hold it for later, though.
He flashed a wide grin, cigarette bobbing up. The two other boys flanked him as if they were his backup. Sam felt conflicted about giving a child tobacco. Then he figured he'd be getting it elsewhere. Sam handed it over, and the kid tucked the Lucy behind his ear.
I seen you, said the ringleader as he grabbed a lighter out of the back pocket of his filthy jeans and started playing with it. Always wearing the same shit. You're not some kind of emo child molester, right?
Sam laughed and shook his head.
What child molester would tell a kid he was a child molester, though?
The kid laughed.
True. What's your name? It's not Lester, is it?
The kid smirked again.
Last name Molester?
His friends chortled on cue. Sam, said Sam. I used to skate here back when I was around your age.
What's up, Sam? I'm Bastion. This is James.
He pointed at the shorter of the two boys with slicked back hair.
And Rico.
Rico nodded and cracked his knuckles. Sam nodded, stifling a smile. They were cartoon goons. He thought about what Penny would do if he had brought her as his backup. Probably stare at them combatively, asking invasive questions, and confusing them later by offering band-aids and Neosporin from her kit as needed. This morning she'd coached him on how to approach them. None of this matters. We're all biding time until we die anyway. He's probably bored. Kids get bored. Go unbore him. So anyway, he said, I don't skate as much now because I'm a documentary filmmaker.
Penny. My mom's coming. It was 8:42 a.m. on a Saturday, perfect time to bring up topic she'd been avoiding for months. Is that good or bad? Suboptimal. Not a fan. Nope. Me neither. Of mine. Why? You go first. Penny always had to go first. No, you. Sam went first. My mom shouldn't have been a mom. Why? She's an alcoholic. Whoa. Yeah. Sucks? Yeah. What else? Isn't that enough? You tell me. I think she hates me. She doesn't hate you. Penny wrote before she thought about it. What the hell did she know? Some moms eat their young. Some do it without meaning to. Hate's a strong word, but I don't think it's too far off, TBH. Okay, your turn, LOL. It's so early for mom talk. Sorry. No, tell me. Mine makes me sad. Why? She thinks I'm great. Tough crowd. She wants to do everything together. And? I'm a huge disappointment. How? We're so different. My mom wants to be besties. We're not at all. The whole thing is so sad. It bums me out to think about. Oof. Are you going to be okay? She wondered if she would be. Celeste set her off so easily. She remembered the Apple Store fiasco and wondered if this trip would be a repeat. Penny didn't have the energy for Celeste, with her hugeness and her sucking up all the air in a roomness. Her mom monopolized her life so completely, and Penny was only just getting her footing in a life that was hers alone. Hers and her phones. God. Honestly, if Penny had to choose between saving a puppy or her phone from an oncoming train, she'd lunge for the phone, and that was awful. The line that separated her phone from Sam was becoming increasingly blurred. Sam was her phone, and her phone was Sam. Her rose gold friend pal in its little black outfit. Whoa. Sam was her anima. Shit. It wasn't a romance. It was too perfect for that. With texts, there were only the words and none of the awkwardness. They could get to know each other completely and get comfortable before they had to do anything unnecessarily overwhelming, like look at each other's eyeballs with their eyeballs. With Sam in her pocket, she wasn't ever alone. But sometimes it wasn't enough.
Penny knew she should be grateful, yet there was this niggling hope, this aggravating notion running constantly in the background of her operating system, that one day Sam would think about her and decide, to hell with all those other chicks I meet every day who are hot, not scared of sex, and are rocket scientists when it comes to flirting. I choose you, Penelope Lee. You have an inventive, not at all gross way with snacks, and your spelling is top-notch. Penny was looking at her phone when the screen lit up in her hand. It was a call. From Sam. Whoa. Penny glanced over at a still-sleeping Jude, quietly got out of bed, and went into the bathroom. Hi. His voice was deep, as if he'd just woken up. Hi. Penny cleared her throat. You called me. She heard him laugh. Penny ran the shower, as if the room were bugged. I am aware of that. Why the escalation? She asked him. He laughed again. Penny had no idea why she worded it like that. I mean, why'd you call?
You didn't answer me.
What? Penny's heart was hammering. She sat on the floor.
I asked if you were okay. You didn't respond. I became momentarily worried.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'm fine. I was thinking about mom stuff.
Well, it's the responsibility of the emergency contact to inquire.
I'm going to be honest with you. The rules of emergency contacts continue to evade me.
He laughed again. Penny smiled so hard it broke her face. Moms are rough.
Yeah. Penny thought about how satisfying it would be to introduce Sam to Celeste as her boyfriend. He had so many tattoos. In fact, the only upside to Lorraine being pregnant is that it would scandalize Celeste that Penny's boyfriend was a dad. For all her "I'm a cool mom" posturing, Celeste wanted Penny comfortably settled with Mark.
I've been avoiding her since I got here, she said. I feel kind of bad about it.
She adjusted the shower water so she wouldn't waste so much of it.
I haven't seen my mom in a while either.
Where does she live?
Here.
Austin?
Yeah.
Oh. They sat in silence for a bit. What's yours called?
Mine's a Celeste. Brandy Rose.
Well, as names go, Sam's mom's didn't not belong to a stripper. Penny checked for the mom dossier she had filed in her head. She carefully put Brandy Rose, alcoholic, and not Sam's emergency contact in there.
What's a Celeste like?
Well, her birthday's coming up. That's a whole thing. There was this one year she accidentally double-booked dates with two different guys. While she was out to dinner, the second dude came to the house and I thought he was a murderer. Good times.
Sam laughed. How is that not the plot of an 80s movie?
I felt bad. I made the guy wait in his car and he had these flowers. It was the worst.
When was this?
It was before she had a cell phone, so I was 8.
And you didn't have a sitter?
Penny tried to think about the last time she had a sitter. They didn't really do that at her house. Let's just say when I was little and my mom was out, I'd go to bed with a ketchup bottle.
I already love this story so much.
It was a foolproof plan. If the bad guys came in, I could douse myself and they wouldn't kill me because I was already dead.
Jesus, I can't tell if that's the cutest thing I've ever heard or the absolute most sad.
Both?
God, I keep picturing tiny you in the dark frantically hitting the 57 on the Heinz bottle and it not coming out.
Penny laughed. I guess it's cute and sad. What about Brandy Rose? Any cute sads to share?
Well, Brandy Rose had this thing.
Sam. Sam didn't know why he called. Only that he wanted to talk to her, like actually talk to her. And more importantly, he wanted to hear her. He hadn't planned on bringing up his mom,
He certainly hadn't intended to divulge the story of the worst night and morning of his life. That night was about as country song as things got. In the fateful collection of hours, he'd lost his girl, his home, and his family. But Penny asked, and he wanted to answer. What about Brandy Rose? Any cute sads to share? Sam loved hearing Penny's voice and the deep, scratchy way she laughed. But man, he should have peed before he called. Instead, he settled onto his side and drew the comforter up. He felt as if he were at a sleepover. Well, Brandy Rose had this thing where she loved nothing more than watching the Home Shopping Network. It was true. It didn't matter if it was a collapsible cross-country ski machine, an oil-free deep fryer, or a unisex sweater that also turned into a staircase for your dog. If it was peddled on the TV, Sam's mom wanted it. The habit worsened after Mr. Lang divorced her, but everyone has hobbies, and window shopping through the one-eyed babysitter was hers. The trouble was that his mom was addicted to ordering it. The lot of it. Late at night. That night, the worst night and morning of Sam's life, Sam and Lorraine were torched on gin martinis. He'd suspected she was cheating on him, only he didn't have proof past a gut feeling. He figured, stupidly, that a night on the town would be romantic, but then he ran out of cash. Sam headed home to pick up a few things, prize among them a small, stemmy stash of weed he'd left in his sock drawer, figuring he'd crash at Lorraine's after, as he always did. When Sam opened the door to his mom's, he was taken aback by the smell, the way garbage stinks of rotting orange peels no matter what's in it. He didn't want to bring Lorraine in, except that she had to pee. "Heya, Brandy," sang Lorraine, peeking from behind the door as she walked in. She burst out laughing when his mother glared at them from her chair in the front room. It had been weeks since Sam was home, and he was startled by the squalor. Without him to tidy, dirty dishes had stacked up. There were empty takeout boxes on every surface, and there was mail strewn on the floor that nobody had bothered to pick up. Coming home after a night out had been a bad idea. Laura was wearing a bra as a shirt, and Sam's embarrassment for everyone ignited into a bright, white rage. When he slid on a collection of crinkly envelopes, which made Lorraine cackle again, he snatched them up to discover they were addressed to him. Slender white envelopes stamped with angry red threats. "She'd been opening up these credit cards in my name and running up thousands of dollars on junk," he said. "Jesus. How white trash is that?" He cringed as he said it. He hated that term. Penny didn't answer. She didn't have to. "My mom lives in a trailer," he said. "I lived in a trailer." People live in trailers. Sam wished he could see Penny's face, though if it had registered pity or disgust, it would have destroyed some part of him. Lorraine dumped him the morning after. "There wasn't enough space to keep the boxes inside," he continued. "She'd stacked some outside under a tarp. It was demented. I couldn't stop yelling. I wanted to shake her or push her. I was so drunk and so mad." Tears dampened his pillow. "Did you shake her?" "No." "Did you push her?" Sam wiped his nose on his shirt. "No. I thought for a second I was going to hurt her, though. It's why I left. I haven't spoken to her since. Also, it's why I don't drink anymore. I don't drink anymore. At least not really," he added, thinking about Lorraine and their last hurrah. Sam sat up. His nose was blocked. Shit. He'd called her to cheer her up, and now he was crying. Penny was like sodium pentothal to the jugular. He couldn't stop telling her his worst truths. It was horrifying. Penny was silent. "I'm sorry," he said. Sam felt depleted, ragged. "Why?" "I don't know where that came from. I called to see if you were okay." He laughed dryly. "I genuinely thought I was going to tell you something profound and reassuring about the human condition or something. What a spaz, right?" "We're all spazzes." Sam nodded glumly. Ugh. He wanted to die of embarrassment. "You probably needed to tell someone for a while, and I'm glad it was me. And whatever, maybe you were right." "About what?" "This is probably how emergency contacts work. You say something to your person before you go nuts and blow a gasket. God forbid anyone has a panic attack," he said. She laughed.
Exactly.
So. As I was saying.
Yeah.
Are you okay? She laughed again.
Yes, thank you for asking.
Are you okay? Me? I'm fucking fantastic.
You win, you know.
At being fantastic?
No, you won the mom off this round.
Sam laughed.
Penny. Phone calls. Who knew phone calls were so intense? Penny thought about what Sam had told her. About Brandy Rose. The trailer. Penny didn't know anyone who had grown up in a trailer. It was clueless, but she'd assumed she and Celeste were on the poorer side of the spectrum. Where Penny wore her Koreanness and her weirdness on the outside, you'd never guess that Sam wasn't in the same tax bracket as everyone else. Sam trusted her. That was a big deal. Progress had been made. Not that she and Sam were trying to get anywhere specific, or that phone calls necessarily led to hand-holding, which led to makeouts and dates and marriage and kids, but somewhere, somehow, a needle had been moved. Sam really trusted her, and she felt lucky for it. They were getting closer. It was the best feeling in the world. With Sam's call, it was as if the best part of her day had already happened. As Penny showered, she wondered if her mother would see a change in her, if she appeared more worldly or something. Then again, Penny used to stare at her mom, silent screaming about the bad things that happened, and Celeste never got a clue. She wiped down the foggy mirror. Penny never looked the way she thought she did in her head, like how your recorded voice sounds positively vile when you hear it out loud. She applied some of her mom's lipstick and smiled as if she were posing for a picture. Was this her new life? Would she and Sam be calling each other now? She loved the interface, how they could tell each other anything on text, from silly, trivial things to deep truths, and hoped that part would still happen. She'd bought an app that saved a copy of everything they'd said. Phone calls, though. Oh, man. They were something else. So heart-squishingly intimate. She could almost feel his breath when he laughed. Penny wished she could stay in that call forever. Is she tiny like you? Does she dress cool or super momish? Jude was dying to meet Celeste, so they rode the elevator down to the lobby together. It was a source of great curiosity that while Jude's parents were over in California and Mallory's mom had flown in twice from Chicago expressly to decorate her daughter's dorm room, Penny's mom, who had an hour away by car, remained a mystery. Celeste was both easy and hard to explain. Penny thought about her first day of kindergarten. Even at a young age, she was mortified that her mom had required so much extra face time from her teacher, Ms. Esposito. She recalled the way her teacher smiled with eyes widened over her mom's shoulder at the other parents. The way that she, despite being younger than her, patted Celeste on the arm as she sniffled. None of the other parents were crying. Not to mention how Celeste had worn these completely incorrect tie-dyed tennis shorts and had dyed her socks to match. The worst was during recess when Penny saw her mom standing outside the school gates, spying on her. She'd spotted her mom's frothy, permed hairdo crouching conspicuously behind the bus stop. At one point, Celeste bought a popsicle and sat on the bus bench to eat it, as if she'd forgotten what she was doing there in the first place. She's fun, said Penny. We're nothing alike. Everybody loves her. As if on cue, Celeste arrived. In white jeans, blinding white sneaker heels, a white tank top with silver writing on it, and gobs of silver jewelry. It wasn't Celeste's fault that she resembled a reality show stage mom with questionable judgment straight from central casting. Oh! Said Jude in a tone that implied that it finally made sense. Your mom's hot. Yep, said Penny. Explains a lot. Yep. Mom, Penny called out. P, Celeste swiveled around and ran toward her with her arms outstretched for a bear hug. Penny laughed. Her mom stepped back for a quick audit of her daughter's appearance. Aw, baby, you look terrific. You too, Mom. She really did. Hi, Mrs. Lee. Jude smiled. Come here. Celeste pulled her in for a hug. I've heard so much about you. Celeste was a smooth liar. And actually, I'm Ms. Yoon, she said. Lee's Penny's dad's name. Unmarried, never was. Anyway, call me Celeste. Sure thing, Celeste, said Jude, smiling. And I know you haven't heard squat about me because I know absolutely nothing about you. Jude linked her arms with Celeste, and the two walked ahead to the elevator. Tell me everything. Penny's a regular Fort Knox. Penny followed behind them. Celeste and Jude chatted easily. Neither of them had inside voices, and Penny was relieved that they weren't sharing the elevator ride with anyone else. So, Mom, said Penny, you're here. What do you want to do? I want to go shopping for my birthday. Celeste smiled at Jude. I'm turning the big 4-0 in 4 traumatizing weeks. Scorpio? Asked Jude. Saggy cusp. Aries, said Jude. Oh my God, I'm Aries rising. Celeste and Jude high-fived. Penny realized the astonishing truth that she'd simply given up one crazy roommate for another. She checked her phone. No new messages. She unlocked the door to their bedroom and invited her mother in. This is us. Jude's side was covered in photographs, posters, various burnt orange UT paraphernalia, beer bottle labels stuck to the wall, and stuffed animals. On Penny's side, there was nothing but a small framed picture of her and her mother that had been packed inside her suitcase until 40 minutes earlier. Penny was glad she'd remembered to dig it out and place it on the desk. Let me guess which side is yours, Celeste exclaimed. After an eyebrow threading, a pair of jeans for Jude, a new caftan for Celeste, and an Egon Schiele postcard book for Penny's secret shrine dedicated to pining for Sam, the girls were peckish. What do you want? Thai, Indian, vegan, New American? Jude rattled off suggestions while they piled their purchases into Celeste's hybrid wagon. I need a coffee before we do anything else, said Celeste, slamming the trunk. Penny didn't hear it so much as she watched Jude's mouth move in slow motion. Coffee? I know exactly where. Jude jumped into shotgun. Shit, 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 shit. Up until this point, Penny had been on her best behavior. She tried on everything Celeste had badgered her into. She'd held a Zen master's peace in her heart and allowed Jude and Celeste to tease her habits, how she only ever wore black and never showed her figure. Penny understood that it was great that her roommate and her mom were getting along, even if the two of them together were a vaudeville act. There's a great place close to the dorm, said Jude. I'll navigate. Penny felt her soul escape her body. Coffee? What? Don't be crazy, Mom. You'll be up all night, said Penny, getting into the back seat with increasing hysteria. Let's drop everything off at the room first. I'm bushed. Penny, said Jude. Your mom is almost 40. I'm sure she can handle a mid-afternoon latte. So take a left here, she directed. Penny's throat tightened. She took inventory of what was happening around her. Possible measures to derail a horribly inopportune Sam encounter. 1. Crap. She had nothing. So my uncle works at this place, continued Jude. They turned onto the drag. Oh, is he cute? Asked Celeste. Penny was going to be sick. She pulled out her phone to check her appearance. Her sunblock had turned into a crumbly powder on her forehead. She licked her fingers and desperately tried to smooth it in. Plus, as luck would have it, Penny hadn't done laundry in 2 months and was dressed in ratty black leggings and a Willie Nelson t-shirt that read, Have a Willie Nice Day. It was 2XL, and she'd got it 6 years ago at a Bucky's truck stop. She'd had an outfit planned on the off chance that she'd see Sam again. It involved a blazer and some ankle boots with a heel. Maybe she'd get a blowout. That was her fantasy. This was not how she wanted to see him after their morning call. Penny breathed deep. She considered texting Sam a warning, except what would she even say? When Celeste killed the engine at a parking meter a block away, Penny wanted to cry. "Wait, hold on," she blurted. Penny pulled out her lipstick. "Oh, honey," said Celeste. "I knew you'd love it."
Sam. House on the weekends was a different scene, a bizarro brunch world of chatty local families with young kids instead of the regular college students in their free Wi-Fi K-holes. Sam was hunched over the counter. The morning felt like forever ago, or as if it happened to someone else. There was no accounting for why he unlatched his neck and disgorged his ugliest stories on Penny at once. He'd called her under the guise of being some knight in shining armor, and then, yeah, he'd barfed on her. He thumbed through an old Austin Chronicle. He flipped to the classifieds, the usual mix of penis enlargement ads and moonlighting masseurs. Sam wanted to tell Penny everything. He wanted a record of his thoughts and feelings and stories to exist with her, like a time capsule for this strange period of his life. With her, he felt less lonely. He hadn't even realized he was lonely. He hadn't let himself.
Sam!
It was Jude. Hearing his sunnily disposed niece call his name filled Sam with a rush of guilt. Had they made plans? Behind her was a flashy Asian woman and... Penny. Penny. Actual Penny. He'd remembered her hair accurately, how wild it was, as if he could root around in it for treasure. He ran his fingers through his own hair. It was greasy. He took off his old man glasses that he'd bought off a drugstore carousel. They magnified his eyes in the dorkiest way. "Hey," he said. Sam concentrated on staring right at Jude and partially at the other lady and not at all at Penny. He didn't want to openly ogle her. Jude bounded over and hugged him.
"You remember my roommate, right?" she said, gesturing to Penny.
Yeah. He couldn't avoid it any longer. He looked, absorbed her. The visuals were coming at him fast. The angle of her cheekbones, the tilt of her chin, the flash of gray fingernails. There was a wiggly strand of hair that fell over her left eye, her eye that was looking at him. He stored the details as quickly as he could. She was wearing the same bright red lipstick she'd worn last time. "Hey, Penny," he smiled, wide, stupidly. "You okay?"
"Oh, fantastic," she said.
The voice was so good, deep like on the phone. Maybe deeper, as if her text bubbles had spent a late night in a speakeasy. Penny tucked her hair behind her ear and blushed hard.
"And this is Penny's mom, Celeste?"
Before Sam knew it, Celeste came in for a perfumed hug. She smelled of singed cotton candy and flowers. "Whoa," he said reflexively, jolting back when he felt the heave of her bust on his chest. Celeste laughed.
"I guess you're about as into physical contact as my kid is," she said.
Sam watched Penny tense up at the mention of kid and felt a pang of sympathy. Knowing her as well as he did at this point, she'd want to be struck by lightning right about now. He cleared his throat. Sam wanted to text her, partly to make fun of her and partly to say this was going way better than it had any right to.
"Jude tells me you've got the best iced coffee and the most delicious pastries."
Celeste peered into the display case.
"I read a write-up on this place."
"Well," said Sam, "we do our baking on the premises and..."
"Wonderful,"
Celeste cooed.
"Actually, Sam's being modest," said Jude. "He does the baking. I keep telling him he should go to school for it and become the next Julia Child."
Sam ran his fingers through his hair again before wiping his hands on the back of his jeans.
"Just a regular Guy Fieri," Penny mumbled.
Sam smiled. He said. "I wish I'd known you guys were coming. I would have made something." He busied himself with surveying the remaining muffins and cookies. "The cookies are pretty good, and the last remaining lemon bar is worth digging into. Sam grabbed a piece of tissue and pulled it out. Penny loves lemon bars, don't you, baby? Said Celeste. Sure, she said. Sam could hear the eye roll in her voice. Lemon bars are pie adjacent, he said, quietly stealing a glance at her. A slight grimace played on her lips. I wish I'd thought to make a sheet cake. He was rewarded with a smile then, a real one. It probably depends on the crust you're using, said Celeste. I have a great recipe that uses vodka, you know, so you can get your sugar high with a little kick. She laughed at her own joke, a forced monosyllabic ha, like a cymbal. Sam smiled politely. The type of person who couldn't let a drinking reference pass them by was a very specific sort of person. You seem tired, Jude told him. I'm fine, he said. Listen, I'm sorry I've been flaky about dinner. Oh, Uncle Sam, don't fret. Jude leaned over and rubbed his shoulder. At least the coffee's free and plentiful. So, an iced coffee for you and for you, Celeste, was it? An iced coffee for me, too, and for Penny, with almond milk if you have it. She's lactose intolerant. Penny stared straight at the ceiling. Penny is lactose intolerant. He filed it in his head. God, I've been living with you this whole time and you've never mentioned it, exclaimed Jude. Shocking, said Celeste. You know, it took me 2 months to find out she had a boyfriend. Can you believe that? Boyfriend? Penny has a boyfriend. He filed that into the folder, too, with a little red sticky label. A boyfriend she hadn't once thought to bring up? She was a vault. Sam wondered what the punk looked like. He willed her to meet his eyes, only she kept her attention firmly on her hands. Mom, said Penny darkly. What? Sam was mentally texting her again, considering the words that would elicit the most information about this boyfriend without betraying his annoyance at being kept in the dark. Then again, apparently nobody knew a goddamn thing about Penny. Celeste took out her wallet. It was neon pink, fuzzy, and stuffed to the gills. The coin purse attached to the side bellowed out completely, the metallic leather crinkling under duress. It was as much a conversation starter as Celeste was. Penny glared at it, horrified. Oh my God, Celeste, said Jude. I love your wallet. It's adorable. Thanks, I just got it, she said. I can get you one if you want. Really? Enthused Jude. I would die. Celeste radiated with pleasure. Sam's heart warmed toward Celeste then, and Jude, who could fill any awkward moment with a bracing surge of good cheer. Please, Celeste, said Sam, put that away. It's on me. Celeste clucked and pointedly stuck a $10 bill in the tip jar, holding his gaze. Sam made their drinks and a plate of treats and led them toward his favorite couch in the back and excused himself. He texted Penny on his way back to the counter. Wow. Why the escalation, LOL. You good? Moments later, Penny walked over alone. You forgot my almond milk, she said. She smiled. He cheesed back. He knew his outsized canines gave him the air of a starved mutt, but he couldn't contain himself. He nodded at her shirt. I really did, he said. Dick, she said, smiling. I'm more of a Waylon Jennings man myself, he continued, grabbing the almond milk from the fridge under the counter. He sniffed it and poured some into a small metal creamer. He handed it to her with the handle pointing toward her so their fingers wouldn't touch. This is a lot, she breathed. It's nice to see you, Sam, she practically whispered it. And Sam couldn't deny the pleasantly warming effect of her saying his name. He cleared his throat and shoved his hands into his back pockets. His left hand collided with his glasses. Ugh, worst glasses ever. He couldn't believe she'd seen him in them. Not that it mattered, seeing as she had a boyfriend, triple exclamation points. But still. Need anything else? Napkins, she said, grabbing a few by the register. Thanks for being nice to my mom. Sure, he said. So that's your mom. I can't believe you're you, she said at the same time. We're going to have to workshop the shit out of this tonight, he said, laughing. I might have to call you again.
Penny.
Dinner was sushi someplace downtown, where she ordered tuna rolls that tasted like sawdust. While she picked at them, her mother and roommate discussed